Trump-endorsed MAGA extremist Bernie Moreno says he wants to move Ohio forward. He wants to make America great again. For whom? For people of color? For black people? Nah. Moreno is just looking out for himself and his white supremacist MAGA buddies. He doesn't believe in multicultural America and equality for all. Moreno was not for us and will never look out for us. We must re-elect Sherrod Brown, who's a champion for our community and all Ohioans. Vote for Sherrod Brown, November 5th.
Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Trump-endorsed MAGA extremist Bernie Moreno says he wants to move Ohio forward. He wants to make America great again. For whom? For people of color? For black people? Nah. Moreno is just looking out for himself and his white supremacist MAGA buddies. He doesn't believe in multicultural America and equality for all. His own company has a long history of being sued for discrimination. He even called for reparations for white people and is firmly against inclusion and diversity programs. If elected, Moreno will rubber stamp Trump's radical 2025 and roll back policies that'll directly harm black families, our finances, jobs, social security, and health care. And he'll turn back the clock on our civil rights. Moreno thinks white supremacy will make America great again. Real talk, Moreno was not for us and will never look out for us. We must re-elect Sherrod Brown, who's a champion for our community and all Ohioans. Vote to secure your rights and your future. Vote for Sherrod Brown, November 5th.
Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
It's playoff time in the Canadian Football League. Welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Fellas, round one was definitely intriguing, so let's get into it. We're discussing the Calgary Stampeders making coaching staff changes.
West and East Division Award winners.
Chris Morris named Edmonton Elks new president.
Manitoba Bison's head coach, Brian Doby, coaching his final U Sports game.
English CFL TV ratings dropping 6%.
And Canadian QB Curtis Rourke having another banner day for the Indiana Hoosiers. But first,
the Toronto Argonauts knocked off the Ottawa Redblacks in the East semifinal 58-38 as Chad Kelly threw for 358 yards with four touchdowns. His team's defense sealed the contest late, recording two pick sixes off Drew Brown. What did you make of the performance from both teams, and who wins the East final, Toronto or Montreal?
Well, it's going to be awfully hard picking against Toronto after what they were able to accomplish in that game, and specifically what Chad Kelly was able to accomplish, because there was a lot of questions going into it. A home playoff game at BMO Field, the exact circumstances, albeit against a different team and in a different week, is what happened last year, wearing his first ever playoff start. He had what may have been the single worst playoff performance by any quarterback in CFL history. And I'm not going to go so far as to say that this was the single best performance by any quarterback in CFL history, but it was perfect. That's a perfect passer rating from Chad Kelly. What he was able to accomplish going 18 of 20 was truly remarkable. Every time there was a bust in the Red Blacks coverage, he was able to exploit it for big gains, with the exception of the one fumble, which frankly I don't fault him for, because Lorenzo Maldon almost split him in half. He was very safe with the football. He didn't make any major errors. He didn't put the ball in harm's way. He bounced back from some early adversity to answer all of those questions about whether or not he's a playoff choker. I think the Argos offense is the most potent right now in remaining in the CFL playoffs, and they're the team that I have picked to go all the way.
I want to focus on the Ottawa Redblacks, and let me say this first, fellas, that I believe Tommy Condell to be a decent human being. Let's say, okay, he's always been nice to me. He's invited me in, you know, multiple times in the past to watch film, and I appreciate that invitation. That said, you look at his time with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the lack of commitment to running the football, and then specifically this game, going into it without a real true running back on the roster, Braylon Addison starting at running back. And you look at the other teams that have been successful, namely the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in recent years in the Canadian Football League. And I believe that you have to at least have some semblance of a running game. Now, I'm not going to say that you need to copycat what the Blue Bombers are doing to beat them, or that you have to run the football 20, 30, 40, 50 times in a game to be successful. But when you look at this matchup, that Argos front is the real key for them on defense. Flo Ormalade, Jake Serezna, those guys are monsters. And when they know that the majority of the time it's going to be a pass play, those guys can just get after it. And also for the offensive line, the Red Blacks have built a more physical offensive line than they have had in previous seasons. That's one of the main reasons why they got in the playoffs, fellas. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the Ottawa Redblacks have only won one game since releasing Reichel Armstead. Is that right?
Give me 10 seconds. I'll be able to verify.
All right. I'll continue. You fact check me there. But this is what I'm talking about. You know, you look at the Saskatchewan Roughriders, who not only dressed one American running back, but put another one on the roster that happened to be Reichel Armstead. And they were a physical team that muscled out the BC Lions. Hodge, you got the stat?
They've won two because they won against Hamilton week 21.
Okay, my bad. So since releasing Reichel Armstead, who was among the league-leading rushers and could have been the league leader in rushing if he continued to have a starting job. Now, part of the reason that he was released is admittedly Reichel Armstead's, you know, attitude, but he just really wants to get the football. So that's why I want to focus on this for Ottawa, because I believe that going into this game, the Red Blacks had a chance to win it. And yes, it was close at times, but I just truly believe that if there was a semblance of a running game for multiple reasons, but top among them for exactly what JC talked about, that you can keep Chad Kelly on the sideline, that your offense gets that balance and at least has some, I don't want to even say threat, but physicality to it. Because I think that helps offensive linemen impose their will instead of just catching pass rushers like Ormalade and Serezna coming at them all game long. To me, that was something that really stood out. Yes, I know the game kind of got out of hand there. The Argonauts put up 58 points, which was wild. But you're putting a lot on Drew Brown in his first career playoff start to throw it over 60 times.
Yeah, that to me is a huge red flag. And I know that there are some analytics people who talk about how running the ball doesn't matter and you can be just as productive. Well, I'm sorry, but when your quarterback drops back to pass 61 times, that is putting them at a huge risk of getting injured, right? And yes, some people will look at the stat line from Drew Brown and go, well, he put up 487 yards through the air. How can you criticize that? Well, if you average that out over 61 attempts, that means that every time he tried a pass, the Red Blacks generated fewer than 8 yards. By comparison, Chad Kelly threw for 358 yards over 20 attempts. That's almost 20 yards each time he put the ball in the air. And obviously, by attempting one third of the passes Drew Brown did, you're taking hits off of him. Now, I thought the Red Blacks defense did a great job of pressuring Chad Kelly in this game. They delivered a handful of really, really good shots. One of them, unfortunately, was over the line with the helmet to helmet that caused Chad Kelly to be momentarily pulled out of the game. And I appreciate Kelly's frustration. I also thought it was a little odd that given the last time he was at BMO Field, he then told us after the fact that he was concussed
in the playoffs.
The last time he started a playoff game at BMO Field, he suffered a concussion and it went undiagnosed and it was all bad. And then he complained that after going helmet to helmet, he got pulled. That was a little odd for me, but whatever. There's no denying he played a sensational game. As for the Red Blacks, I couldn't agree more, Dunk. Especially when you look at the offensive line in that makeup. Dino Boyd, franchise left tackle, out for the year. Jacob Ruby playing there. Yes, he played left tackle back in the day with the Richmond Spiders, but he's been in the league for a decade at this point, almost exclusively at guard, because he just didn't have the feet to play out there at tackle. And now you're asking him to say, hey, go and block Flora and Rimelade 60 times off the edge. And by the way, him and Ralph Hawley and Jordan Williams, Jake Serezda, they're going to be running stunts left, right, and center because they don't have to respect any type of contain. They don't have to respect running lanes. Like, that is a disaster for an offensive line, especially because this offensive line, when I look at it, like Drew Desjarlais is one of the top offensive linemen in the league, no doubt about it. But to me, he is more of a bruiser. He is more of a run blocker. The Bombers drafted him fourth overall in 2019 out of Windsor to be a pile mover. And he did that extremely well, helping them win two Grey Cups. He's now the highest paid Canadian offensive lineman in the CFL for a reason, but you're asking him to pass block 60 times a game. Is he good at it? Yes, but he's better at pushing the pile in the run game. So I thought that was an issue for Ottawa. The other thing I want to say quickly about this game is this team reminded me a little bit of some of the teams you see, right, who enter the playoffs after long stints out of the postseason. You know, like the Winnipeg Blue Bombers back in 2016 would be an example. We've seen some clubs do this. This team, and I thought Drew Brown's comments after the game were totally on point, basically him saying, look, I'm still a young quarterback. I think going out there throwing a couple of interceptions might be good for my development in the long run. Like, this team, I don't think had it in them to go on a Grey Cup run. I think they probably needed a year to get back into the postseason, get their feet wet with a relatively young, relatively inexperienced roster. And I think that they will live to be better next season. But I agree, Dunk. They got to run the ball. You can't be one-dimensional in the playoffs. It's too easy for the defense to take that away.
To me, that's an issue that goes right to the top of the organization, because I thought Condell did a decent job of compensating for the lack of a running back. I mean, the Red Blacks
Hold on. It's not compensating. It's a choice.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, dealing with not having one or choosing not to have one.
That's
right?
Terminology. Choosing. This was a choice.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Doc. But they didn't suffer in terms of time of possession, right? They absolutely dominated that game, especially in the first half, in terms of holding on to the football. I think ultimately we're way more successful in terms of marching down the field than anyone might have expected in that circumstance. And really, if you ask knowledgeable people like our own contributor Ben Grant, the Argos struggled with those six receiver sets early on, and that's part of the reason why Ottawa went up in this ball game. Now, eventually, the Argos squared those issues away and were able to get back in the lead because they struck fast, whereas Ottawa had to matriculate the ball down the field. My issue is, how is there not another running back on that roster that can imbue enough trust that Tommy Condell or...
I think we've lost JC. I'll take over for him. He'll come back in. But to me, part of the challenge for the Red Blacks is, without a running game, it's tough to produce in the red zone. This team only scored touchdowns on 41.5% of their red zone possessions this season. That is almost 10% lower than the next worst team. And that led to Lewis Ward trying a season, like, league leading, I believe it was 47 field goal attempts from inside of 40 yards. The next most was 37 by Sean White, a team that is also not in the playoffs any longer in BC. So, to me, I think this was a positive step for the Red Blacks. I don't think it was realistic for them to go from bottom of the barrel to a Grey Cup in 1 year. Mind you, I suppose they did that 2014 to 2015 after their expansion year. But the East is a lot tougher this year than it was back in 2015, right? With top dogs like Montreal and Toronto in the division. That wasn't the case back in 2015. So for me, I think this is a positive season for the Red Blacks, but they are still a flawed football team. They have to do a better job running the ball. And a good way to do that is, or I should say, they have to be better in the red zone. A good way to do that and into the playoffs and produce that way is running the ball.
Let's balance this out a little bit, okay? Because Tommy Condell is known as an offensive guru, and I think rightfully so. And the game plan going into the East semifinal was clear, Hodge. Spread the Toronto Argonauts out. Use what people in football might call extended handoffs in terms of getting the ball out on swing passes and screens. It's just that I believe, and I think it's proven to have been true, especially with the run the Blue Bombers have been on, that, you know, when you get up, and you talked about this, I think JC did as well, the Red Blacks are up on that football game. And then if you had a running back to start imposing your will on that defense, that beats up the other team. And it gives them a sense that they are being thoroughly let me speak, thoroughly dominated, not just athletically, but physically. And I think that's where the Red Blacks could have won this football game. I liked the game plan from Tommy Condell in terms of throwing the football and how they got off after the Argos, man, if I could speak, early in the game. I just think if you have that running game to start imposing your physical will and then balancing it out a little bit, that you know, split second where, let's say, Flo or Mladé doesn't know on first down if it's going to be a run or a pass, buys you that extra time that helps out your offensive line. But when you have an idea that, okay, this team isn't even dressing a true running back, then I can just get off the ball that much faster. The get off happens so quickly, and it's critical in the Canadian Football League with the yard off the ball. So I'm not saying that you can't ultimately go and win trophies with that kind of an offense. I just think that you need to be able to do it. And the Red Blacks have shown when Reichwald Armstead was there that they can do it to a high level. So it's not like they don't have the athletes and the ability to do it. It's just an open question to me as to why that choice, and that's why I wanted to correct JC, because it is a choice, was made not to dress a true running back in the game to at least give you that ability to physically punish the other team, especially when you get the lead and with a young quarterback. I'm not saying Drew Brown's not good enough to win a football game throwing the football over 60 times, but it's a lot to ask a player in his first playoff start. And it has nothing to do with Drew Brown's skill set or mentality or lack of leadership, anything else. This guy's arrow is completely, definitely pointing up. But it just is something that, you know, we'll have to ask the Red Blacks about in the offseason as to why that decision was made.
Well, and Drew Brown is not the biggest quarterback in the world, right? If he was 6'5", 240, it might be easy for him to take the shots that come with 60 pass attempts in a game. I don't think he's best suited to doing that at the CFL level. The other issue we didn't talk about, right? Running the ball is important because it sets up play action. So many plays in the CFL that are big passing plays come off play action. If you run the ball four times in an entire game, there's no reason for the defense to respect play action. They're just going to pin their ears back on the defensive line, and they're going to pull their linebackers back, DBs back off the ball.
And in the secondary, you can start jumping routes. And I'm with you. We should talk about the Argos, but that's a real key here, is that there's no threat of play action. And I'm not necessarily one that's in the camp that says you have to run the ball to make play action matter. But when you're not running it at all, it's not going to matter. So that's the other thing here, is, you know, you're going to spread them out. You're going to go empty sets, six receivers, have Braylon Addison in the backfield, do all these things. Well, the DBs can start to jump these routes because they're going to pattern read. They're going to understand what's coming at them throughout the game. And I thought the Argos did a great job on defense adjusting to what that game plan was for Ottawa.
Chad Kelly is a divisive figure in the CFL for obvious reasons, and I'm not going to rehash them here. I know that some people, anytime they hear anything positive about Chad Kelly, they jump on you. I get it, but I'm talking exclusively about Chad Kelly, the football player in the situation. And I think it needs to be said that after an unbelievably poor performance in the playoffs last year, he was exceptional. Like, he had two incompletions and five total touchdowns. And when you have more than double as many touchdowns as incompletions, you're doing something right. And when I look at this Argonauts team, it's almost impossible to find a flaw. Like, the right side of that offensive line struggled at times. Anthony Vandal and Dejon Allen struggled to communicate. Red Blacks took advantage of that. Kadeem Carey only averaged about 4 yards a carry. I was a little bit surprised by that, maybe close to five, but didn't run the ball quite as well as I thought. Other than that, though, what can you possibly criticize about this team? Janarian Grant is sensational. Jack Kassar, probably the best special teamer in the CFL. Makai Polk, right now, probably the best deep threat in the CFL. And yet they've got all kinds of other receivers. Tavares Daniels, Kevin Metal. I love his underneath stuff, by the way. I'm not saying that he is this person, but Kevin Metal is the closest thing we've seen to Nick Lewis since Nick Lewis. 230 pounds, catching passes out of the backfield, those little drags, and turning them into unbelievable gains and punishing opponents in the passing game. The offensive line was good in pass protection, especially again the left side of the offensive line. And then defensively, I mean, we talked about Wynton McManus, how he's just seemingly in on every play. Tunde Adeleke, I think, is finding maybe a notch in his game that some maybe thought had disappeared. And then the DBs are feasting, like Benji Franklin knocking down passes, picking off passes. I think this team is going to win the East Final. I'm not even convinced it's going to be super close. I'm not saying it's going to be a blowout, but it wouldn't surprise me if Toronto went into Montreal and won something like a 34-24 East Final in the Belle Province.
Double digits, my man. If I had to look at one area that's exploitable, the Red Blacks showed it, it's a secondary if you can protect. And the interesting part of this for me when we talk about the East Final is that, with all due respect, Walter Fletcher, as a true running back, doesn't necessarily scare you. So the Alouettes, I don't think they're going to go empty and throw the ball 60-plus times, but Jason Moss is going to have to establish that Fletcher can be relied upon in the playoffs. We saw it last year with William Stanback, had a critical run in the Grey Cup win, the upset over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. That ground game was key, and Cody Fajardo's not going to come out and throw it, you know, 50, 60 times. Jason Moss, I don't think, is going to do that. I do think, though, that the advantage with Montreal playing at home is definitely decided. That is going to make communication ultra difficult, especially with all the air horns, hate them or not, at Percival Molson Stadium. This game, to me, is going to be close. I'm not even going to pick a winner here, so I don't look like an idiot for picking the wrong team, but I think it's going to be really close. You know, oftentimes recency bias clouds us, Hodge, and I think that's maybe what's happening to you with the Argos.
No, it's not, because I think the Argos have been the best team in the CFL for the past 2 months, and I've been beating that drum, and people have been starting to wake up to it. I also, when it comes to the air horns, think it's inappropriate to say hate them or not, because nobody does not hate them. It's just hate them, period.
That's not true. Montreal fans love them.
I guess. Outside of the province of Quebec, there is not a hate them or not. It's just hate them, but I digress. JC will try to get back into the show. His power just went out, he let us know. So he will try to rejoin this call, but remains to be seen.
Trump-endorsed MAGA extremist Bernie Moreno says he wants to move Ohio forward. He wants to make America great again. For whom? For people of color? For black people? Nah, Moreno is just looking out for himself and his white supremacist MAGA buddies. He doesn't believe in multicultural America and equality for all. Moreno was not for us and will never look out for us. We must re-elect Sherrod Brown, who's a champion for our community and all Ohioans. Vote for Sherrod Brown, November 5th.
Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders won the West semifinal 28-19 over the BC Lions as AJ Ouellette ran for 70 yards and 2 touchdowns. His team's defense intercepted Vernon Adams Jr. 3 times. What stood out most from the game for you? And who do you think is going to win the West final in the Peg?
It was the physicality from the Saskatchewan Roughriders, which continued from the regular season into the postseason and even got ratcheted up a notch. This team is playing, I believe, exactly the way Corey Mace would like. It's a physical group that's going to force turnovers. And now we've seen it proven in the postseason. Run the football, have some balance, and Trevor Harris is going to be precise. He made a number of throws that I don't think too many quarterbacks in this league can make. Only the elite quarterbacks can make. I'm talking about off linebackers and defensive backs' heads into small windows in coverage. It was a great performance from Trevor Harris. He's not going to get talked about like Chad Kelly is. You're drooling over there over the guy wearing number 12 for the Argos, rightfully so, because Harris didn't account for five total touchdowns through one in the game. But he was, as Corey May said, surgical in this one. The defense closes it out. I would like to see, though, from the Riders, if they have visions about going into Winnipeg, winning the West Final, and getting to the Grey Cup, that the offense needs to be able to close out these games at the end of it. Okay, that has to happen. When you have the ball in your hands, you need to be able to get it done. You can't continually rely on this defense coming up with fourth quarter interceptions as Nelson Lacombo and Roland Milligan did with the Lions in scoring territory. I do think Saskatchewan has a real shot to go into Princess Auto Stadium and beat the Blue Bombers, but you got to be able to close it out. If you're going to go in there sold out crowd, when the ball is in your hands in the fourth quarter, if the Riders have a lead, they need to be able to get it done on offense.
I couldn't agree more, and I was looking back at the West Final in 2021. This is the last playoff game between Winnipeg and Saskatchewan. I was at that game. It was the latest West Final ever played because it happened, of course, during the pandemic season where this thing started in August, and it was like unbelievably cold. The Bombers turned the ball over five times in that game and won 21-17. The Riders were plus four on the turnover margin, still lost. And I went back and again looked at my article from that game and read the game notes, all that stuff. Three picks for Zach Kolaris. Two were blatantly his fault on bad reads. One was on Nick Dembski, who kind of shoveled a pass into the arms of a Saskatchewan defender. I believe that was in the end zone too. And then there were a couple of fumbles, one from Rashid Bailey, one from Drew Olatarski for Winnipeg. So obviously, the Riders would love to repeat that 5-1 turnover ratio. They don't want to repeat, though, of course, the ending of that game, which was the Winnipeg Blue Bombers winning at home to go to the Grey Cup, a game that they would win over the Hamilton Tiger Cats in Hamilton. I loved what I saw from the Riders in this game. I thought AJ Ouellette had one of his best games as a Rider. Did he blow the doors off? No. But he showed some of the signs that we saw back last season in Toronto, and some of those parts of his game have maybe been missing right through parts of this season. I also thought that the offensive line handled itself very well after suffering an injury that forced Logan Ferland to move out to right tackle. And then, of course, you had big old Trevon Tate, who's been going, he's been at right tackle all year, suddenly having to reverse his footwork, go to left tackle. He got eaten for lunch on one sack, but otherwise held his own. It's tough.
Trevor Reed got rolled up on.
Yeah, and it's tough when you have all those moving pieces. Peter Godber's obviously been a longtime CFL center, but you know he was essentially a healthy backup because they didn't want to mess with the cohesion along that offensive line. So I thought those guys handled it well up front. I mean, Jameer Thurman is sensational. Marcus Sales avenging his former team, cutting him back in training camp. The thing that stood out to me most about this game is the BC Lions ultimately failing to flex when they needed to most, right? This team changed its makeup on defense, changed its makeup on offense to try to be more geared towards playoff football. And at the end of the day, nothing changed, right? William Stanback was almost a non-factor, seven carries for 27 yards. They couldn't run the ball. They didn't do a great job of stopping AJ Ouellette along the ground, Reichwell Armstead, and he combined for 94 yards, two touchdowns. Again, not blowing the doors off, but that's a pretty decent day along the ground. And then receiving-wise, what is going on with these American receivers in Vancouver? Javon Kotoy was excellent, obviously 82 yards in the score. Justin McInnes, who is arguably the top receiver in the CFL this year, certainly led the league in receiving. Another good performance, 66 yards and a touchdown. But Keon Hatcher, Alexander Hollins, who are making a boatload of money combined, and then Stephen Berryhill III, who's a rookie who's kind of filled in that extra spot, Aiden Eberhardt on the field as well, did next to nothing. I mean, Keon Hatcher had one really nice grab, but out of eight targets, only two catches for 47 yards. Alexander Hollins, two catches, 16 yards. Like, this is a team that relies on throwing the football, that relies on their receivers to make plays downfield. And I think Hatcher has a decent excuse because he's coming off the torn Achilles that he suffered in last year's West Final. But at the end of the day, this team is paying way too much money to guys like Alexander Hollins and Hatcher for them to be invisible come playoff time. Yes, you can give credit to the Riders for taking them away, but this wasn't just a trend for this postseason game. I mean, Alexander Hollins was down on the year overall. Keon Hatcher was not the same player he was for most of the season. And for that fifth receiving spot, I know that the Lions had Kieran Poissant there, the Canadian, for a while, but whether it was Aiden Eberhart, whether it was Barry Hill, there just wasn't a lot of production there. So if I'm the BC Lions, that is arguably the number one bullet point for me this offseason. What can I do to get more out of my American receiver spots? Because right now, there's not enough production there.
It's an easy answer, Hodge. Put more Canadians on the field. I'm not even joking. Those are the guys that are producing. I'm sick of hearing this BS about, you know, we need more Americans or the Americans are better. You clearly just showed how the Canadians for the BC Lions in that game in the receiver group were better than the Americans. We're better than Americans that are much higher paid than the Canadians, okay? That is point one. Point number two, the BC Lions turned out to be posers. Everybody was talking about this team. The sexy pick to go to the Grey Cup. I admittedly didn't make a Grey Cup pick because I'm not really into that business anymore. But a lot of people were talking about it. They start hot. Everybody's like, yeah, Vernon Adams Jr. is taking this team to the Grey Cup. They're posers at the end of the day. If there was a scenario where the BC Lions had won the West, possibly could they have gotten to Grey Cup? Yes, but in the playoffs, the physicality ratchets up, and I don't think that this team was physical enough, especially down the stretch, and definitely not in this playoff game against the Saskatchewan Roughriders. They got beat up, flat out. Not a good enough football team to win the game. The other tidbit that I will add, and this is where I felt like the game was over before anything even kicked off, Hodge, and I usually don't say things like this, but it speaks to the mentality that this team had going into the game. I was in the Hotel Saskatchewan coffee shop. I believe it's called Cafe Royale. I love that spot. I've been there for all the home regular season games.
What you getting there? You don't even drink coffee.
It's a coffee shop, but they got smoothies in there. So I go in there and get my smoothie after my workout. I see. And I'm sitting in there, and you know, people tend to come in and out, and I hear some BC Lions players come in and out. And one of them said, oh, I need to get my hot drink because it's cold outside. And I'm sitting here thinking, bruh, it's like nice weather in Saskatchewan. You think it's cold outside? This game's over. Over, right there. That speaks to me to the mentality. Corey Mace embraces the cold, knows his team needs to be ready for the cold. AJ Oles out there flexing those big Thor biceps with no sleeves over them. Man's ready for the cold. The Lions were not ready for the cold or for postseason football. That is why their season is over. And I do think, I'm not going to pick a winner, I'll leave that to you and JC later in the week, but that the Riders are real live dogs going into Winnipeg because Corey Mace has this team playing physical. They're clearly going to commit to the run and have balance on offense. And the defense, at some point in time, is going to force a takeaway in that game, if not multiple takeaways. This should be a great, highly competitive West final. And I think if you're the Blue Bombers, you're playing it to prove that this run, and I still don't know if we can call it a dynasty because there's only two Grey Cup victories in there, but this dynasty in the West Division, let's call it, because they've dominated the West Division for the last five seasons, is over or not. There's a lot on the line here for both of these teams.
For count me in the camp, by the way, since we're talking about the dynasty, I would say the Bombers are not currently a dynasty. I think if they get to a fifth straight Grey Cup, I think you can make the argument because getting to this game five times in a row is stupidly hard.
Like, I think you got to win, though.
Stupidly hard.
Like,
I think if
the Edmonton Eskimos from the 70s and 80s are like,
they did.
You got to win.
Yeah, but a lot of people consider the Stamps a dynasty, right, from like the Huffnagel-Dickinson era, and that was, I guess,
that's
three.
That's not you or I, my man.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, as a whole, could you make the argument? I'm not saying the Bombers currently are or aren't. Objectively, I would say personally, I would not call them a dynasty right now. I think if they win a Grey Cup, they're inarguably a dynasty, right? 3 and 5 years with five straight trips, I think, is a dynasty. I think if they win on Saturday, that maybe gives them a case, but again, if they lose the Grey Cup for a third straight year, that kind of throws a bit of a turd into the punch bowl, so to speak.
Gross, bro.
Yeah, that's a Little Giants reference. So shout out to those who watch Little Giants as often as I do. Getting back to the game at hand, though, this was a very impressive performance for the Riders. They simply outclassed the Lions. And I was one of those people last offseason saying the Lions are going to be my pick to go to the Grey Cup and win it at home. Obviously, that did not come to fruition. And then we'll talk about this a little bit later in the show. That is why I believe we will be seeing some changes in BC this offseason.
That's what you call a tease. I love it. The Canadian Football League unveiled its West and East Division Award winners, including Brady Oliveira and Bo Levi Mitchell for MOP, and Roland Milligan Jr. and Tyrese Beverett for MODP. Were there any snubs? And if so, who?
The four players you mentioned, Oliveira, Mitchell, I guess best, Milligan, and Beverett, were my four picks for these awards. Those were the players I voted for, so I do not think there are any snubs there. I was delighted to see Ryan Hunter get the nomination out of the East Division. I thought Ryan Hunter should have been the most outstanding offensive lineman in the CFL last year. I also voted for Logan Ferland out of the West. Martez Ivy was almost my pick. He was sensational at left tackle, but I thought that the way Logan Ferland bounced around that offensive line was very impressive. Rookie, I thought, was a mistake. Shamar Bridges, great season, but I thought Mekhi Polk came on really strong late, had more receiving yards than Shamar Bridges, and unlike Bridges, who I think was maybe more of a product, still a great season, don't get me wrong, but was maybe more of a product of targets and volume as kind of a feature guy in that Hamilton offense, I thought that the performance from Polk in a stronger overall receiving core as more of a deep threat who opposing teams maybe had to do a better job game planning for more was more impressive. So I thought Polk might have gotten ripped off in the rookie category. I also don't really understand why Jason Moss was the coach of the year candidate out of Montreal. And I'll also say this. I always forget that we're voting for coach of the year because we always talk about the six player awards throughout the year. And of course, there are no team nominations for coach of the year. Everyone's just a candidate. I voted for Ryan Dinwiddie, and frankly, I'm not sure why anybody else did it. I mean, Jason Moss had a Grey Cup team, and full credit to Jason Moss for winning last year's Grey Cup. Unbelievable run for the Alouettes. Much respect. But he came into the 2024 season with essentially his entire Grey Cup team back. There was maybe a little bit of controversy with the Sean Lemon suspension, but other than that, it was smooth sailing in La Belle Provence. Ryan Dinwiddie came into this season with a team that had gotten absolutely decimated in free agency. Like, they got picked clean. They lost multiple players to the NFL, including Quantez Stiggers, who was, of course, drafted by the New York Jets. They, of course, then, quite famously, after free agency, after they have any chance to do anything about it, lose their franchise quarterback for half a year. And between all of that, they finished second. And it should be noted that the voting for these awards at the league level is done before the semifinals. So all of the league awards ballots were in before these playoff games started. But if you need any further evidence as to how good this Toronto Argonauts team is under Ryan Dinwiddie, it's the fact that they beat the doors off the Red Blacks late in that one to put up 58 points. Unbelievable performance. So I voted for Ryan Dinwiddie. I thought he was going to win it. I guess a lot of voters just checked off the team with the most wins, which I thought was disappointing. Corey Mace, I did think was a good pick, however, out of the West. Though he didn't have the most wins, I thought he had the most approved this season. And yes, Mike O'Shea had the most wins in the West Division, but I like that pick for Corey Mace, the first-year head coach. The other guy I thought was a bad pick, and I want to preface this by saying he had a great season, and he's a really nice guy to boot. But I was stunned to see Sean White as the special teams player nominee out of the West Division. Sean White, yes, he led the league in field goal percentage at 94.3. I would imagine a lot of voters just looked at that and said, check, done. Here's the problem. His average attempt was 30 and a half yards. Almost all of his success came within 40 yards. Rene Paradis was 93.2 on the year. I voted for Paradis, by the way. Average length of 37 and a half, 20% longer attempt. Yet Paradis had essentially the same rate. And Sean White, let's not forget, spends most of the year kicking in a dome. I'm sorry, but kicking in a dome is simply easier than kicking out where the wind is blowing, especially a place like Calgary that gets a lot of wind. And of the five candidates, I would almost argue that the least deserving player was Sean White. I mean, Sergio Castillo's percentage was a lot worse, but he was hammering balls from 60, like, on repeat. Jake Julian was incredible punting the ball in Edmonton, and then Roland Milligan Jr., the Saskatchewan candidate, obviously, was great on teams all year. So I thought that there were a couple of minor snubs. White, though, I thought was a major snub. Whether it's Paredes or Julian, whoever, I thought he was arguably the least deserving player out of the West in that category.
To me, the major snub was Roland Milligan Jr. not being the West Division nominee for MLP. He got my vote, and part of it, I suppose, is historical, to be quite honest, that if he's not going to get there this year, then what defensive back is ever going to have the opportunity to do that? And not just a defensive back, but an ace on special teams. 20 special teams tackles. I believe he was tied for second in the league in that category. Hodge, you can fact check me if you want. I think he was there.
Yes, you're correct.
Or tied for the second most. But that's how I felt about it. Brady Oliveira should have won the MLP last season. He got my vote last year. I think he did have an outstanding season. But I think if you look at these two players relative to their positions, that Roland Milligan Jr. was, by many people's account, far and away the best defensive back in the league. And he was one of the top special teams players. So if you're a defensive back or a defensive player in the future, thinking you got a shot to win MLP and you've dominated two facets of the game, well, with all due respect to Brady Oliveira, he dominated one. Then let's just call it what it is. Let's add an O in there. Most outstanding offensive player, just like they do with most outstanding defensive player. You know, there are positives, but also drawbacks to the way that the CFL has named these awards. So I think let's just call it what it is. But I do think that Roland Milligan Jr. should have been the West Division nominee or West Division winner for most outstanding player. That is nothing against Brady Oliveira, who got my vote a year ago. I was going through, you know, all the numbers, you know, kind of campaigning for him in a way with the media because I felt like he deserved it last year. He had a historic outstanding season and still couldn't get it over Chad Kelly. Yes, I know he was the quarterback of the best team in Argos history, but from a production standpoint, I felt like you measured those two up. And Chad Kelly was not even the best quarterback from a statistical perspective in the league. Now, it shouldn't all come down to that, but I felt like Brady Oliveira should have been the MLP, and I feel like he's getting a bit of a reprieve from voters this season. And I'm not saying, again, that he's not a great player, but because he didn't get it last year when he should have won the award and got my vote. To me, that is the most glaring error in Hodge. You know, we talk about some of the snubs, and Mekhi Polk, I think, is one of them for sure. And it just brings me back to your idea. We need to fix this system. And for one, for starters, can we please go back to calling them West or East Division All-Stars? You are not all CFL West Division. That makes no sense. It is just another thing that people can make fun of. So whoever is the new commissioner, please just go back. West Division All-Star, East Division All-Star, CFL All-Star. That didn't need to be changed. The CFL wasted their time on that when they could have listened to you, Hodge, and gone about changing the voting process in the way that these major, and I stress major, individual awards are handed out, because we need to get this corrected. The All-Star stuff did not need to be corrected. But these major awards, I implore you, CFL, whoever the new commissioner is, whoever's in the league office, let's get it fixed, man. This ain't hard. Let's honor the players who actually had the best seasons. Let's not split it up by division anymore. Let's get it right. Please, please.
I kind of like the all CFL moniker, but to me, it should just be first team CFL,
yes,
second team all CFL.
That's
and just
it.
Have the best players. You don't have to go by division.
Not even second team all CFL. No. CFL, one team. Hodge, there's nine teams, bro. There's nine teams.
Well,
one
fair.
All CFL team, and you can have your divisional all-stars. I'm comfortable with the divisional all-stars. Like Hodge,
okay,
for example,
fair.
There's only been nine Saskatchewan Rough Riders quarterbacks ever named West Division All-Stars, let alone CFL All-Stars. Like, it's a rarity. So
right.
Let's just have West Division, East Division All-Stars, and an all-CFL team that is one team.
My only nitpick with the Divisional All-Stars is if, let's say, two quarterbacks out of the East throw for 8,000 yards and 100 touchdowns, that means that one of them is still never going to be a Divisional All-Star. Because
no, but I'm saying if we use your idea,
fair,
overarching, that those guys could still be voted for. But we can still have, you know, who people believe are the best in the divisions, if we're going to go that way, and at the league level, vote for that overall guy. I kind of see what you're saying about all CFL teams. That makes some sense to me.
Like, I just think if you're the second best quarterback in the league, it shouldn't matter which division you're in. You should get a nod for some type of all-star or all-CFL recognition. And the divisional thing, by the way, stinks for the awards for a few reasons. Now, I will say Olivera Mitchell is a super compelling MOP vote. I don't know who's going to win that one. I'm looking forward to awards night for that. But if you look at most outstanding Canadian, all due respect to Isaac Adeyemi-Berglund, a guy who I interviewed before he even came into the CFL. Really nice guy. Great season with Montreal. But I think everybody and their grandmother knows that Brady Olivera is winning most outstanding player. So there will be no, just like last year, there will be no tension on awards night for that award. It's obviously Brady. And the award would be a lot more compelling if, let's say, there were three finalists, and those finalists were Brady Olivera, Justin McInnes, who was incredible for the BC Lions this year, and Tyrell Ford, who had seven picks for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at corner. Or maybe that third one is Sam Emilis, who had a great year for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
I don't think you need to limit it.
I think three players is a good number. I don't think you necessarily need to have three. If there's two very obvious choices, maybe only two people get enough votes to get in the ballot.
It could be four or five. Or
maybe it's four or five. I get it. For the CFL standpoint, maybe there's a concern with, well, if there's five candidates for each award, suddenly that makes things a little more logistically challenging come award season. But whatever, I think three is a good number, right? If most outstanding Canadian right now was, let's say, Olivera, McInnes, and Ford, there would be really compelling conversations like, well, maybe Brady and Justin split the offensive vote and that helps Tyrell. Well, maybe Brady and Tyrell split the bomber vote and that helps Justin. Or, well, maybe, you know, the fact that Brady won this award last year limits his chances this year. Well, is there a chance Brady can win MOP but not MOC if that goes to McInnes? Like, there are ways to make this more interesting and more compelling, because as it stands right now, there is zero tension for most outstanding Canadian. Most outstanding defensive player, I think, will be close. Offensive lineman, I think, could be close. I think Janarian Grant is going to win in a walk for special teams. Rookie, I think, will be close as well between Anderson and Bridges. But regardless, my point is there's a few awards that will be given out in front of a sold-out crowd in Vancouver, which should be electric and really interesting, that are going to be boring, because it's very obvious who's going to win based off of this system. So this is a system I would like the CFL to change.
Hodge, I think you could eliminate the logistical issues. The CFL could just quietly fly the winners in if they can actually make it. I think that would be the way to go about it, because they do have a media availability with the nominees the night before. But, you know, I just feel like it's so close.
Good point.
In time, and people don't really care about hearing from the nominee necessarily, with all due respect. That doesn't win. So I think there's a way that you could go about it.
It should also be stated that the day before the award show, the nominees who are at the availability are the ones who aren't playing in the game. Because if you're playing in the game, you don't do that availability. So yeah, you're just flying in. Like, I'm sorry, but it's been almost sad in previous years to talk to guys the day before awards when they very, very obviously know they are there just to lose and get on a plane and go home. Yeah. Like, they know it. You could see it in their eyes. You could see it in their demeanor. They've often, by the way, lost a playoff game just like a week beforehand or 2 weeks beforehand. So, yeah, that's a good point. Maybe just keep – hell, you can keep the winners in the lockdown room with the media. Just have them in there. You know, They can have dinner. They can eat. They can whatever, because everybody in that room is under lockdown anyways. And then when they win, yeah, they go out and they do their thing. Heck, you could even that way – do the media availability before the announcement if you want to. Just say, hey, The winners are here. We're going to do a 30-minute window before dinner starts. Ask them whatever you want about winning these awards. And that way you've got your quotes ready to go. You got your stories ready. There you go. We're solving the world's problems right now. Just do the availabilities before they win. That way you get your quotes out there with the announcements. Boom. Done, fixed, sold. Next topic.
The CFL awards problem. But let's get real here, okay? Let's run down the major awards. You said Jenerian Grant should win in a walk. Agreed. He got my vote, okay?
I've already voted. So, yes, Jenerian Grant.
So have I. So let's do it right now, okay. Because I believe
I voted for Jenerian Grant.
We should talk about it. Most outstanding player, Brady Oliveira.
I voted for Brady. Yes.
There we go. Most outstanding defensive player, Roland Milligan Jr. I don't think that this should be close, Hodge.
I voted for Tyrese Beverett.
You crazy, bro. You are crazy, dude. Come on.
Here's the issue. 20 special teams tackles for Roland Milligan Jr. Sensational. There's no reason for those to count to this award because it's a defensive award. And for me, Tyrese Beverett has a better body of work, and I'm taking the player who I think is more versatile. Tyrese Beverett has started games in this league at defensive back, at will, at Sam. To me, he is the better player. Roland Milligan Jr.
You're crazy.
Great
Roland
year.
Milligan Jr. could do that too.
I'm going with Tyrese Beverett, but he hasn't done it, and I'm not going to judge a player based on something he could hypothetically do. I'm going to judge a player. But do I think Roland Milligan Jr. is going to win this award? Absolutely. Why? Because he didn't get the MOP nod, and I think that that'll build him sympathy with voters. But I did vote for Beverett, and I will not lie or misrepresent that publicly. I voted for Tyrese Beverett.
Okay. It should be Roland Milligan Jr. for all those out there. Most outstanding Canadian, Brady Oliveira.
Obviously Brady. Next topic.
Most outstanding offensive lineman, Ryan Hunter.
I voted for Ryan Hunter. Logan Ferland, again, great season, great versatility. Ryan Hunter has been starting at left tackle for the Argonauts the last while. He can also start at center. He is the most outstanding offensive lineman in this league. He should have won this award last year.
Then what do we have left here? Most outstanding rookie?
Most outstanding rookie, Nick Anderson and Shamar Bridges. I voted for Nick Anderson, who I thought brought tremendous physicality to that Edmonton Elks defense. And again, like I said, I don't think Shamar Bridges, as great of a season as he had, not taking anything away from him, but Mekhi Polk, in my opinion, should have been the nominee from the East Division anyway. And I'll also say this, Ralph Hawley, who had 8 sacks as a rookie, as a defensive tackle for the Argos, should have arguably been up for this award. He couldn't even get divisional consideration because he plays on the same team as Polk. So I voted for Anderson, but this is another category that honestly could have 5 or 6 nominees at this point of the season. You can make an argument for any one of them.
I voted for Anderson too. Job done. The only one we disagreed on was MODP Hodge.
What about Coach
really
of the Year?
Wrong.
Corey Mace or Jason Moss?
That's an easy one. Corey Mace.
I honestly can't remember my vote off the top of my head, but I believe I voted for Corey Mace. Because again, Jason Moss was like, I don't think he should have been up for this award anyway. So I'm pretty sure I voted for Corey Mace. I wrote it in my notes. I'd have to double check.
I hope you did. Go double check, because Corey Mace took over a team that had not been to the playoffs for 2 straight years, that had not won a regular season game after Labor Day for 2 straight seasons. He had to deal with his franchise number one quarterback, Trevor Harris, being out for a chunk of the season with Shea Patterson in there. He came in, they overhauled the defense. Yes, there are a couple pieces left, but I don't think some of those pieces like Anthony Lanier, for instance, are going to be around there much longer. Yes, Roland Milligan was already there. He was defined by this regime in terms of personnel under Jeremy O'Day. But what he did with that team, especially when you look at dealing with some injuries consistently on the offensive line, and this leads me into another point. I think we should look at potentially expanding the major CFL awards. I believe there should be most outstanding assistant coach, because this season I think that would go to Edwin Harrison for what he did with Saskatchewan's offensive line. And I think it would be unique to go with most improved player. That would create a lot of debate, but I think either most improved player or comeback player of the year could add some more, I don't want to say intrigue again, but just add a little something.
I could add some je ne sais quoi. And by the way,
I love it.
Yes, I did vote for Corey Mace. Confirmed. I took a photo of my ballot. Yes, I got Corey Mace on there. So I expect he'll win, but then again, who knows? The Alouettes had the most wins in the CFL this season, so it's possible some voters are just checking that box.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists, are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Edmonton Elks have hired Chris Morris as the team's new president following a 12-year run as the head coach of the University of Alberta. What takeaways did you have from his introductory press conference? And do you think he'll usher in a new era of success in the place that was once known as the City of Champions?
That was unbelievable. For his first public comments, the energy that he brought, the excitement, the honesty. How about him, Hodge, laying out a timeline for hiring a general manager? Down to the day.
Actually answering a question is a great way to win the media onto your side. Yes.
It's an unbelievable thought, right? To be open and honest about the money that you have raised with the Golden Bears, right? Actually giving tangible figures. I am really intrigued to see what Chris Morris can do as president with the Edmonton Elks. Is it a position that he's going to have to grow into? Certainly. But we maybe shouldn't credit people before he has done anything, but Rick LaLosheur was the one to ask Chris Morris if he would even be interested, presented that idea. Morris was thinking he was going into a meeting with LaLosheur to battle him about the 50-50 allotment that goes to the University of Alberta Golden Bears. And it's like, no, actually, do you want to be our team's president? Like, imagine the flip in Morris's mind in that meeting. So let's credit LaLosheur to thinking outside the box here. And, you know, Hodge, I bet you that there were some other presidents around the CFL that were snickering at Chris Morris because they're thinking, oh, this guy doesn't have the business acumen to get it done. And he's out here, you know, talking with all this energy. But to be honest, this is what we need in the Canadian Football League. Some energy, some passion, some pride in the Canadian game. I'm not saying other presidents around the league don't have it. But you go watch that press conference and tell me that Chris Morris isn't going to give the cliche 110%, if not more, in this job. That was unbelievable. If I'm an Edmonton Elks fan, I'm already coming back to the franchise and buying season's tickets because he's going to turn it around. And I didn't even touch on yet, Hodge, the clear and pointed arrows, shots, whatever you want to call him, that he fired at Chris Jones. I loved it. This guy came out here, guns a-blazing about what he's going to do, backed it up with a tangible timeline as to hiring a general manager, and actually provided detail. And I don't want to say that other people don't have energy, because some people might say, what about Michael Pinball Clemens or, you know, some other people in the CFL? But you could feel something there with Chris Morris that was different than, dare I say, any other executive in this league has elicited from just myself in my time covering the Canadian Football League. It was awesome. I hope he can bring this franchise back to respectability and then some, because that was a great starting ground. But don't get me wrong, he still has a lot to prove.
He does. Our colleague JC, who is not yet back, and I think at this point we can rule him out for the rest of the show, wrote a great column, so please go read it if you haven't already. But the quote was, this is a quote from Chris Morris: I played here 14 years and we never missed the playoffs. The one year we got in trouble, we had 25 lockers in here and we were running through guys. You cannot win that way in this sport. Football is a tough sport. You need to have people you can count on. You have to have people who you can rely on, and you cannot have that if you've got disposable people coming through your building. We will change that. To me, that is a very clear shot at Chris Jones, who was known for having players living out of suitcases, potentially even in houses as part of a quote-unquote pre-practice squad, going in and out of the lineup. Bro, I think partly
those players wish it was as nice as a house.
I think partly, honestly, is a scare tactic just to motivate his current players of, hey, look at all of these guys we've got here ready to take your job. And it should be noted that the Elks have had a ton of guys in the last few years randomly get parachuted in after training camp and very quickly get into starting roles. Like a perfect example would be Sean Oakman after he got cut in Toronto, but an even maybe more egregious example would be Derek Moncrief, who took over as the team's starting strong side linebacker after the first month of the season, despite being out on the street. Like, this was a guy you didn't think was worth bringing into camp, but then all of a sudden he's in your starting lineup and you're cutting guys a week after the, anyways, Chris Morris is obviously not going to run this team by the Chris Jones playbook. And interestingly, since this hiring was done, and I'll add this quickly too, this guy's got a background as an offensive lineman who played locally. He's actually not from Alberta. He's from Southern Ontario, but has lived almost his entire adult life since graduating from the University of Toronto in Edmonton. From there, became a teacher, and then from there became a school administrator. Obviously spent 12 years as a U Sports head coach, but is now a team president. Someone who followed that exact same template from offensive line to teacher to principal to executive was the late, great Jim Hopson. Now, I'm not saying Chris Morris is Jim Hopson, but what I am saying is if you want someone who knows how to work within a budget and who has passion, why not take a public school administrator? Because there is not an extra dime to be spent in those jobs, and you got to have a heck of a lot of pride showing up to your school every day if you want to be a great administrator who can hold teachers and students to high account. So I think that background gives Chris Morris an edge. And obviously he spent the last 12 years coaching football, and U Sports head coaches, as we know, do a ton of administration, arguably more administration than they do actual coaching. So I think that will serve him well in this role. I think that his general manager is going, and I'm speculating here to be very clear, I think his general manager is going to harken back to what he referred to as the Eskimo way in Ed Hervey, who was the general manager the last time this team won a Grey Cup. I also would not be surprised if Ed Hervey's head coach was somebody who he's actually previously hired as a head coach and been around for about 10 years while this individual was an assistant in Edmonton, while Ed Hervey was a player in Edmonton and then the team's head scout. And that is Rick Campbell. Now, Rick Campbell is under contract with the BC Lions for 2025. It is obviously,
according to him,
he told us before the season that he's under contract for 2025. But if you're the BC Lions and you want to make a change after the playoff game, which I'm not saying they do or don't, but if you do, obviously Rick Campbell will be available. And Rick Campbell has previously gone from one organization to the other in the same offseason to become a head coach. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. Wouldn't surprise me if he did it again, becoming the head coach at Edmonton, who, by the way, is the son of the great Hugh Campbell, who is, of course, the head coach of that five-time Grey Cup champion that Justin referenced earlier on in the show. So I would not at all be surprised if Chris Morris ran it all the way back with classic people from this organization. Ed Hervey is the GM, Rick Campbell is the head coach. That is speculation on my part, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was true.
Hugh Campbell had a background in public school administration, I believe, as well. So lots of things line up here. Ed Hervey, Chris Morris played together with the Edmonton Eskimos, won, I believe, at least one Grey Cup together, and were together during those years that Morris referenced when he played in the CFL 13 straight, and this is according to him, the Edmonton football team made the playoffs in all of those years. So he wants to have that kind of consistency with this football team. It does seem that Ed Hervey is the front runner for the general manager position. I think there is a lot of buzz behind the scenes about Rick Campbell potentially going to Edmonton as the head coach there. And if you look at that, it's very sellable to the fan base. You have Chris Morris in here with all of his passion. Ed Hervey, as you referenced, Hodge, a general manager who was the GM with this team when they won their last Grey Cup in 2015. And, oh, by the way, won, I think, multiple Grey Cups as a player with Edmonton and who has ties to Chris Morris. And then you definitely can sell the son of Hugh Campbell, arguably one of the greatest coaches in franchise history, if not the greatest coach in the history of the green and gold. That makes a lot of sense. But let's say it's not Ed Hervey as general manager. There are a number of names around the Canadian Football League that I believe deserve to be spotlighted and that I could think of doing a good job in this role. Let's start with the local fellas first, because you have Kyle Carson, who has helped the Saskatchewan Roughriders team get into the postseason under Corey Mace, has been a real key figure there, especially as it relates to the Canadian draft, but he has had a large hand in American scouting as well. He is really Jeremy O'Day's right-hand man in Saskatchewan. He's from Sherwood Park, which is a suburb of Edmonton. Ties to the city, that's something that Chris Morris seems to have on his list when he's talking about these candidates. Brendan Mahoney with the Calgary Stampeders. Yes, I know he is part of a team that did not make the playoffs, but there were 18 straight seasons there. He's learned from John Huffnagel, and ultimately Dave Dickinson gets the final say when he's the head coach and general manager. Mahoney is from Alberta and closer to Edmonton than Calgary, I believe. So those guys would make a lot of sense to me. If it indeed is G. Roy Simon and he's going to have a shot, you know, I don't want to leave his name out of it because I think he had a different energy that he brought around this team along with Jarius Jackson that he should be in consideration. If it is G. Roy Simon, then perhaps if he's going to be for the first time a full-time general manager, you might want to have someone alongside in the building who has experience as a GM in multiple markets, and that would be Brendan Tamman. I think that can make a lot of sense. I think with what Tamman has done and helped the Ottawa Redblacks get back into the playoffs, that he should be considered for an interview for the general manager role. He might not fit some of the checkboxes that Chris Morris wants, but I think as an experienced guy who's been around this league for a long time, seen a thing or two, that could make a lot of sense. And then I want to highlight one more who's definitely down the list here, but Dwayne Cameron carries himself like a general manager. He is the head Canadian scout for the Calgary Stampeders, has really helped develop some depth there in terms of Canadians with the Stamps, being their CFL draft coordinator, whatever title you want to put on it. This guy is a riser, and much like Kyle Carson, carries himself like a future general manager. So I could see all of these guys being in the mix in some form or fashion. Whether they get an interview or not is to be decided. But I think there is a great pool of largely, Hodge, Canadian personnel men that could be considered, I should say personnel people, for this role in Edmonton.
It'll certainly be interesting to see how the cookie crumbles. Speaking of Alberta, the Calgary Stampeders have turned focus to 2025 with Dave Dickinson remaining as the team's head coach and general manager. This offseason won't be without change, however, as defensive coordinator Brent Monson, special teams coordinator and assistant head coach Mark Killam, and defensive line coach Juwan Simpson will not be back. It remains unclear if there will be further changes to the coaching staff. Dunk, were these the right moves for Calgary?
No. Let's get it twisted. The problem with this team, or we can twist it up, was the offense. The offense was the main problem with this football team, okay? But none of these guys are offensive coaches. These are clearly, Hodge, moves to make change, to tell your fan base that you are doing something. But the offense needs to be better. That is why Dave Dickinson is even more on the hot seat going into the 2025 season, being retained as general manager and head coach. And this decision is going to crank the heat up on the president there, Jay McNeil, and in turn, John Huffnagel, because they're going to ride this horse until the legs come off, okay? Until it's done racing, is far past those days that it should be on the track. Mark Killam is head coach quality in this league. There's going to be a team out there that benefits from adding Killam. I think it would make a lot of sense for him to go to the Saskatchewan Roughriders. The Roughriders last offseason, if people remember, you can go find the article on 3downnation.com. Asked the Stamps to interview Killam for their special teams coordinator role and potentially more. That request was denied. Like, if you were going to bring your brother in Craig Dickinson, why didn't you just let Killam go to Saskatchewan? You kind of held him hostage there for a year, okay? Brett Monson has shown to be among the elite defensive coordinators in this league. Have there been some injuries there that he had to deal with? Yes. Did he get the most out of the unit? You know, suppose Dave Dickinson doesn't think so. But Monson is quality. you could easily see him landing with a former Calgary Stampeders offensive coach, Ryan Dinwiddie, in Toronto. Let's see how the rest of the season plays out with the Argos. This dual coordinator thing has worked so far, at least to get them to the East Final. But I think Monson would be an upgrade there. So when you have coaches that you let go that get picked up quickly and have interest behind the scenes right away, that tells me that I don't think you're actually addressing the issue, which is the offense. The offense has to be better for the Calgary Stampeders and also the way that they go about their personnel. And both of those things fall on Dave Dickinson. So he's got a lot to get solved.
Yeah, a few things. One, we should say that the Stampeders were ninth in opponent net offense. Well, sorry. Let me back that up. Let's address the offense first. Offensively, the Stampeders were eighth in net offense. However, they were ninth in average yards per play, which to me is the better statistic. So, yes, that would be ninth. They were also, by the way, ninth in offensive scoring. Defensively, they also struggled. They were eighth in opponent offensive scoring. They were eighth in opponent net offense and eighth in opposing yards per play. So the defense was a problem. I thought that a number of their veteran players had down years. Micah Awe was not the same player he was in 2023. Mike Rose was not the player he was in 2023. James Vaughters was not the same player he was before the injury he suffered in 2023. And I thought that the secondary from a personnel standpoint was a little bit of an adventure. It seemed like they went into the offseason going, hey, let's just go and sign DeMiro Houston. He'll be our boundary corner, and then the rest is fine. DeMiro Houston had a good season, but the rest of the unit was not fine. I thought they waited too long to get Benjamin LeBros in there at halfback. He was a big upgrade, I thought, over who they had there previously. But at the end of the day, I think the personnel side of this team is a problem. And when you look at the way this organization is structured, John Huffnagle, who I have the utmost respect for, nobody should question what John Huffnagle has done in this league. 5-time Grey Cup champion, 2-time CFL coach of the year. But there's a reason why he's not the head coach anymore. There's a reason why he's not the GM anymore. There's a reason why he's not the president anymore. He's technically a special advisor. That being said, we don't really know what day-to-day looks like for John Huffnagle. I can say that as someone who attends the Combine every year, he's still there doing the same type of what would appear to be scouting work that he did even as the team's president, because there were a few years where he was just the president, not the GM, but he was still, I guess, helping scout players and stuff. I don't really understand. But it should be noted that John Huffnagle's son, Cole, is in his 9th year as the director of U.S. scouting. And so if you are John Huffnagle, who presumably has a hand in these decisions, if you go to him and say, hey, what's the problem? Is it our coaching staff or is it our personnel department? If he says personnel department, presumably that means his son is getting fired. And I don't have a son, but I'd imagine that I would have a really hard time if I did have a son, having a hand in having him lose his job. Right. So I think if you're the Calgary Stampeders, you have the choice. Do we make serious changes to the personnel side or the coaching side? I think that the issue in Calgary is the personnel side, but I also think that there might be a little bit of self-serving going on at the top of that organization saying, you know what, we're going to keep the personnel side together. We're going to change the coaching staff. And on the plus side for the guys who have been let go, Justin, as you laid out, I think that all of these guys are going to find new jobs right away. The downside for Calgary is they talk about the Stampeder way and the history, blah, blah, blah. Well, Mark Kilm has been in this organization for 20 years, right? Originally coming on as the strength and conditioning coach, working his way all the way up to assistant head coach and special teams coordinator. Brent Monson has been in this organization for 15 years, also originally coming in as the strength and conditioning coach. So you're losing a lot of institutional knowledge. Obviously, you're keeping John Huffnagle and Dave Dickinson, who have been there for a long time, but one would ask, or I'll pose this question to you, Dunk. It might be an unfair question. You can let me know. But we've talked about guys like Brent Monson, guys like Mark Killam walking into new jobs. If Dave Dickinson was a quote-unquote free agent today, would any teams look to hire him as their head coach and general manager?
That's a really good question.
Because we think Killam and Monson are going to walk into the same jobs as other teams next year. Would Dave Dickinson do the same?
I'm just going around the CFL thinking about which teams would potentially swap out their head coach, for Dickinson to be head coach or head coach and general manager. And the only team that comes to mind for me is potentially the BC Lions.
I would say the same. But I also say if I had a team, I would love, love, love to have Dave Dickinson as my quarterback's coach or my offensive coordinator. I would like him as a head coach. I wouldn't want him as a general manager. I don't think that's his specialty. I don't think that's what he does best. And I think that the reason for the Stampeders' recent decline, winning only 11 games over the last 2 years, is because of their personnel department. So these changes don't make sense for Calgary for me, but we also should give them some benefit of the doubt and see how things shape up for 2025. Because Jay McNeil, the team's president, did say this team is going to be very aggressive in the offseason in overhauling their roster, and the entire unit might look very different on the field in 2025 than it did in 2024.
There were 8 U Sports playoff games across the country this past weekend. Which one stood out most to you and why, Hodge?
Well, I have to go with the Manitoba Bisons and Regina Rams, partly because I called the game alongside Brendan McGuire on 620 CKRM, but largely because of what this meant for Brian Doby. We're going to talk about him a little bit later on in the show, but Brian Doby, I mean, incredible individual, incredible coach. He coached at the high school level for 21 years, 29 years with the Manitoba Bisons. His team went 7-1, finishing atop the Canada West Conference for the first time since 2007, which was also the last time they went to the Vanier Cup. And I think a lot of coaches would be bitter or angry if their final game was a first-round playoff exit in upset fashion. By the way, shout out to the Rams for playing a great game. The touchdown pass to seal it late in the game went from Noah Pelche to Nicholas Sirleaf, 19 seconds left to win 28-25. This is the quote from Doby post-game. Quote, "It didn't end with a whimper. It ended with a bang. I mean, our guys fought to the end. So did Regina. It was an awesome football game in terms of pure fight by both teams. I think for me, selfishly, that's a great way to go out. And in anyone's career that your team battles to the end, these guys represented all the teams I've ever coached. That was my personal theme to them all year, and I stand by it. I'm so proud they fought to the last inch, the last second, and that's all you can ask for as a team, and they did it. Every team doesn't have the capabilities to do that, but these guys did. I'm proud they've represented all these decades of Bison football by fighting the way they did," close quote. If that doesn't reek of class following a heartbreaking loss, I'm not sure what does. We wish you all the best in retirement, Brian Doby. Well-deserved. But I would also be remiss if I didn't highlight the other two unbelievable finishes. The Saskatchewan Huskies knocking off the UBC Thunderbirds in Vancouver after scoring 2 last-minute touchdowns with an onside kick in the middle. 38-33, what an upset by the Huskies. And then the St. Mary's Huskies, the other Huskies, knocking off the favored St. FX X-Men 21-17. The final play of the game, Alan Young hits Bryson Mayo for a 27-yard touchdown pass. Unbelievable upset. 3 big ones in U Sports and just 8 playoff games. Really exciting week.
Let's go to the OUA, where my University of Guelph Griffins battled but fell to the Western University Mustangs in the OUA semifinal matchup, 30-19. It was a close one, but the Mustangs put the closer on it late. And then we check in on the most intriguing team in the country, the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks. Get it done at home, remain undefeated this season. Taylor Elgersma threw for 348 yards and 3 touchdowns. He is not just a Heck Crichton Trophy hopeful, he is the overwhelming favorite to win that award. It sets up an absolute dandy of a Yates Cup. Western Laurier on the Golden Hawks field. That is going to be quite a football game. And all of the conference title games, I think, are worth tuning into.
Yes, and I'll quickly run down them before Hodges' Heritage Moment. The Yates Cup of the OUA, Western at Wilfrid Laurier on November 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. These will all be Eastern Standard Time, by the way. The Dunsmore Cup out of Quebec, Montreal at Laval at 1 o'clock. Loney Bowl out of the Atlantic Conference, the Huskies at the Bishops Gators, the undefeated Bishops Gators at 2 p.m. And then the Hardy Cup, out of course, out of Canada West. Regina Rams at Saskatchewan Huskies, and all Sasky Hardy Cup, both teams winning in upset fashion this past weekend at 2 p.m. as well on November 9th. Those should all be good games. I'm excited for them. And I will say, admittedly, a little disappointed the Mitchell Bowl won't be in Vancouver because I was looking forward to potentially checking that out the day before Grey Cup. But this isn't about me. This is about the athletes. So congratulations to all those who advanced. It's now time for Hodges
people, Heritage. Wait, real quick. For people that don't know, and I want to say this because a lot of people are going to say, well, why aren't these games on TV? Okay. The Yates Cup you can catch on OUA.TV. And I believe it is to be broadcast on Game Plus Network if you get that channel. In the Quebec Conference, TVA Sport does a great job. Like, I'm talking great job with its coverage, so you can find it on that channel. Out west for the Hardy Cup, the Canada West Football Showcase, my good buddy Darren DuPont will be on play-by-play of that game. You can find it on your local SaskTel channel. And then the game out east in the AUS, I believe should be available via AceLink. But to put it out there to people, if you really want to watch it, it's just a couple clicks away, okay? OUA.TV, I believe Canada West also has a live stream feed that they're going to have through their service. The AUS will have the same. And I'm sure there's a way to find it in Quebec if you want to watch that great Quebec Conference final. So seek it out. Sometimes, yes, I know it can be frustrating because it's not right in front of you on your television set, but I want to stress that this is great football and it is available in our ever-changing media landscape.
Well said. Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2019, Rick Campbell and the Ottawa Redblacks mutually parted ways following a miserable 3-15 season.
You don't say.
Campbell was the only head coach in team history at the time of his departure, having coached the Redblacks to a 44-62-2 record over six seasons in the nation's capital. While his regular season record was mediocre at best, Campbell led Ottawa to three Grey Cup appearances in 4 years, including an upset victory over the Calgary Stampeders in 2016. Less than a month later, the son of legendary CFL coach Hugh Campbell was named the head coach of the BC Lions, where, at the time, the general manager was Ed Hervey. Dunk, what do you remember of this day?
I remember, I hate saying this kind of stuff, but humbly breaking the news and the fact that this had been set up for a long time. People had told me that this was something that was in the works for weeks, if not over a month and months, because of the way that season went in Ottawa. So if indeed, from what we've heard behind the scenes, Hodge, does come true, if Rick Campbell, I'm going to keep using if, becomes the next head coach in Edmonton of that football team there, don't be surprised, because it's happened before.
It has literally happened before, involving the same people. That is true. It's now time for the 3-minute drill.
Hodge, you reported English Canadian Football League television ratings were down 6% year over year. Should the league be concerned?
Concerned, no. I think the Summer Olympics played a role in this. I think the switch to CTV for certain games played a role in this.
And dude, that's the main factor.
Well, and the
CTV
ratings
only
are still up 5% from 2022. So concerned, no. But obviously, if you're the CFL, you would have loved to see this number go up again, especially as these media rights are going to be up for negotiation post-2026. The Montreal Alouettes received a visit from UFC legend George St. Pierre. Do you think he'll inspire them to win the East Final?
Man, if GSP can't get you to fight at the highest level and get a win, I don't know who can, dude. Hodge, you reported the win-loss records for every CFL quarterback in 2024. Which QB stood out the most to you?
That'd have to be Davis Alexander, who went 4-0 and also didn't get credit for it, but really should have gone 5-0 as he essentially won Caleb Evans' start for him. Canadian QB Curtis Rourke had a banner day against Michigan State, throwing for 263 yards and 4 TDs in a 47-10 win. Could his performance rekindle his Heisman buzz?
It could, but he's got to pile up the stats, specifically the touchdowns. He missed one game with that thumb injury. Ashton Ginty, I believe it is, the running back in Boise State, has had an unbelievable year. And Travis Hunter in Colorado are going to be stiff competition. But if Indiana keeps winning, and there are some big-time games on their schedule, including against the Ohio State University, then Rourke's certainly going to have a case. The Montreal Catabans led the way in the RSEQ with 11 conference all-stars. Which of the recognized players stood out most to you?
Well, it'd have to be John Ojo, who is one of the ranked players in the CFL draft rankings. Ojo is an absolute monster off the edge for the Carabans. I'm excited to see what he does in the playoffs for that unit. It was an incredible day for Canadians across the NFL on Sunday as Josh Palmer, Chase Brown, Chuba Hubbard, and Theo Johnson combined for 5 touchdowns. Which one impressed you most?
Ooh. It's got to be the Theo Johnson touchdown. Going up and getting it like a rebound or an alley-oop, my man. You pointed it out to us, too, in the group chat.
That I did.
Let's go to Sergio Castillo, spending his off day on Saturday being a photographer for the Regina Rams in Manitoba Bisons game. Is this his next career?
It might be, and it was just so funny. At halftime, I go into the press box, and Sergio is wearing a Bisons toque, a Bisons hoodie, and generally when I'm covering games at Princess Auto Stadium, he's on the field literally playing, so it was funny to have him as a colleague for that particular day. Last one, Justin Querion was the AUS All-Star quarterback. Can you believe that's the first time a Bishop's QB has earned the honor?
I can, because Bishop's forever was in the RCQ. He threw for over 2,300 yards, 18 touchdowns compared to 9 interceptions. Dude balled out.
Quick correction for myself. That is Jeremiah Ojo out of the Montreal Carabans. I apologize. John Ojo is a former award-winning defensive back with the Edmonton Elks. I always do that. Jeremiah Ojo, okay. Not John Ojo. My apologies to Jeremiah. On that note, we thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. For JC Abbott, who's hopefully still alive, Justin Dunk, and myself, John Hodge, we'll see you next week for our next
Hodge, one second, real quick, because the next time we convene, the three of us are going to be together at Grey Cup. So if you're out and about at Grey Cup, make sure you look for us, and we'll plan to record the show during Grey Cup week in Vancouver.
Yes, we haven't figured out our exact schedule for the pod next week, admittedly, but we will, of course, be together in Vancouver. If you see us out in public, I will probably be the first one you see, because Justin is just a little wiener, and I am very large. So if you see me, don't hesitate, come up and say hi, and we'll have a grand old time. Out west, for a game that will feature either the Saskatchewan Roughriders or Winnipeg Blue Bombers against either the Montreal Alouettes or Toronto Argonauts. It'll be a good one. We'll see you then.
Trump-endorsed MAGA extremist Bernie Moreno says he wants to move Ohio forward. He wants to make America great again. For whom? For people of color? For black people? Nah. Moreno is just looking out for himself and his white supremacist MAGA buddies. He doesn't believe in multicultural America and equality for all. Moreno was not for us and will never look out for us. We must re-elect Sherrod Brown, who's a champion for our community and all Ohioans. Vote for Sherrod Brown, November 5th.
Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.